Hello, welcome to the Lean on Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello and welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. I'm really nervous and excited to bring this episode to you because it's a little bit, I don't know if controversial is the right word, but it's kind of different to what I would normally want to be bringing into the new year. And you probably figured out from the title that I'm going to be talking about having mediocre goals, which pretty much every year of my life, I'm setting big goals. I'm wanting to make huge changes. And I realized at the end of 2022 that some of the things I thought were going to happen this year, I was so sure that I would be in a different place than what I was at the end of 2021. And it was a wake up call because I had this realization that I'm waiting to feel happier, less stressed, and have more time and be there, whatever there looks like, until all of these things happen and I'm bottlenecking, or I'm allowing my happiness and my sense of calm to be tied to a goal that I don't feel like I'm getting closer to, or that I didn't achieve. And it's funny when you look back on pictures and videos of your children when they're younger, and you'd kind of do anything to go back in time and hold your little babies and, you know, deal with the mess of having a toddler and all that stuff. But then in so hard in the moment in the day to day to appreciate where you are. Like, it's so easy in retrospect to be nostalgic and want to go back and appreciate those precious moments, but on the day-to-day it's really difficult. And so coming into 2023, I've realized that I want to achieve, and I really do, and I know that if you're here listening to this, you've most likely got a weight loss goal or some kind of behavioral change goal that's going to require you to experience challenges and essentially become a new person. But I think what's really important coming into this new year is that we are not saying to ourselves that our happiness and our lives are only going to begin when we achieve X. And it's also really important that we understand what are the things that legitimately held us back from achieving the things that are going to make us happier, better functioning humans, reach that next level, and also enjoy the process. Like, those two things are vitally important as we come into this goal setting time where everyone is thinking about resolutions and what they want to achieve. And every year inside of my program, Lean of Plants, we do something called the Identity Challenge. And it's, I wouldn't say it's become the things of myths and legends, because that's just not true, but it's become this thing that people look forward to and that everyone gets involved with, and there's so much energy and momentum around it in a different kind of way than most people think about coming into the new year. Because instead of focusing on outcome goals, which are specific to a point in the future, we focus on identity-based habits. So what, and this is based on the work of James Clear, and the reason that he suggests it and talks about it is that it's much more effective to create lasting change and form new habits when we shift our identity and focus on becoming the type of person who is going to embody those habits that we want to actually create, as opposed to focusing on the outcomes. So a couple of examples of that would be that I'm going to become and embody the identity of a healthy person, rather than I'm going to focus on losing 30 pounds by March. I'm going to become an organized person rather than focus on some kind of future-based outcome, like I'm going to completely reorganize my entire house. On a fitness level, it could be I'm going to become a gym rat. I'm going to become a gym junkie that goes consistently, rather than I'm going to do a pull-up or do 5 pull-ups. Do you see the difference here? Outcome goals are future-based. They are specific. They are based on targets and they're measurable. They have a specific objective. They're externally focused. There's something that we can do or that we can achieve, but they don't have to have internal structures that necessarily support them long term. For example, you can lose weight and not keep it off. And I'm sure if you're here, you've experienced some of that. And the other thing about outcome goals that is really important to understand is that they can be influenced by things that we can't control. So if you put a date on when you want to lose 30 pounds, and then you, for some reason, gain muscle, or you have like a really salty meal the night before. So let's bring that down to a shorter timeline, right? Because goals are always more likely to be achieved if we draw out the timeline and we do that behavior and over and over again. That's kind of a given, right? Let's make this on a weekly basis. So an outcome goal could be lose 2 pounds every week. Use that idea and go, I had a salty meal, I gained a bit of muscle, or for some reason, just because I'm a woman and I have a uterus or whatever else, the weight has gone up and I don't lose the 2 pounds. That is not, whether we lose 2 pounds in a week or not, is not within our control. If you are trying to build a business and build a social media following, for example, how many followers you gain in a week or how many views you have in a week is not inside of your control, even though it is a specific, measurable, external outcome goals. And when people talk about goal setting, they talk about something called SMART goals, which means that they are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So you can see that pretty much all good outcome goals are SMART goals, right? Do a pull-up by March 5th. And obviously that has to be something that is achievable, measurable. It's specific. It's all these things. But what I'm trying to say here is that even if you make the best SMART goals and you have them fit all of these 5 criteria, that doesn't mean that getting there is within your control. And goals themselves have something that is called winner's bias. And what that means is that because a lot of successful people set SMART goals and then they become successful, we correlate goal setting with success. We think that because they set goals, they achieved those certain outcomes. And because enough people win while still doing this, not because they did it, but while doing it, we go, okay, well, goals must contribute to success. But that is actually not shown to be true. Because this bias exists, and then we equate these two things. This is the difference between causation and correlation. There's a correlation, possibly, between creating goals and success, but it doesn't mean that creating goals cause success. And here's the crazy thing about this. People who are not successful, a lot of them also set goals. So goals themselves do not guarantee you will get the results that you want, but identity-based habits do. Because identity-based habits are not about some specific outgoing object that is far off in the future that you don't really have any control over. Identity-based habits are about you becoming the kind of person that will most likely achieve those goals through consistent behavior, through consistent action. So identity-based habits are behaviors and actions that are consistent with a sense of who we are. And the crazy thing is that we always act in accordance with who we believe to be. And this is why I have such a problem conceptually with labeling. Labeling is where we say to ourselves, like, I'm a self-sabotager, I'm a binge eater, I'm a perfectionist, I'm a, who knows, like, I've, you know, metabolism is holding me back. Because when we label ourselves in those way, in those ways, like, those things become part of our identity. And then we're always acting in accordance with our identity, so we do it, right? And so there's this great story in the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, which, if you've been here a while, you know that I am obsessed with James Clear, and I think that Atomic Habits and anything really about behavioral change is where all weight loss and all change actually needs to be coming from, and that we focus way too much of our efforts on wondering if we have all the information when instead of realizing we've probably got enough information to go of, we just need consistency and habits. So he has a story of contrasting two people, and they're both trying to quit smoking. And so the first person says, when given a cigarette, "No thank you, I'm trying to quit." The second person says, "No thank you, I'm not a smoker." And it's such a subtle difference, and to the casual observer, those things are interchangeable. But one of them is an identity of someone who is a smoker, who is trying to quit. The other is of someone who is not a smoker, so it was consistent with them to say no. "I'm not a smoker. I'm never going to accept a cigarette when someone says no. I'm not a smoker," right? Can you see how these two things differ? So identity-based behaviors are crucial to us achieving those goals. And the great thing is that as we start to change our behavior, our identity shifts too. So you don't have to, it's not about standing in front of the mirror and saying, like, "I'm wonderful, I'm successful, I make tons of money, I am lean." I don't believe that for a second. Like, that's, I believe that's BS. If you've ever had that work for you, or if you know anyone that has had that work for you, then great, that's amazing. But I'm guessing that if you're here listening to this podcast, that you recognize that those things don't really work. Instead, it can be as simple as us making tiny little votes for the identity that we want to aspire to. So an aspirational identity could be, "I'm a healthy person." And so the way that we bridge that gap from who we are now, because chances are right now, if you have that goal of losing 30 pounds and you need to become a healthy person to choose broccoli over pizza, then you've got to bridge some kind of identity gap, because those things aren't congruent in the second. But the way that you do that is not through some kind of affirmation or changing anything really deep inside of you, or, you know, willpowering your way into being something that you're not, or faking it till you make it. It's by voting with your actions. And so the key here is to make those actions so small and seemingly insignificant that they don't require willpower, but they start to stack up and culminate in this, almost like building this bridge to this new version of yourself. And so this is how we use the identity challenge within Lean with Plants. We have people think about, what are the outcomes that they want to achieve, right? So those would be your measurable SMART goals. Those would be things like, "I want to lose 30 pounds. I want to be able to do a pull-up. I want to run a marathon." They're all outcome externally based. And then we ask the question of ourselves, well, if I want to achieve X, then who do I need to be? If I want to run a marathon, I have to become a runner. So that is going to be my identity, my aspirational identity. And I'm going to create some habits that are small, that I can do very consistently on a daily basis, no matter what else hits the fan, that are going to vote towards that identity. And then you go, well, what would a runner do? A runner probably puts their running shoes on most days. A runner probably gets outside so that they can start to run. A runner probably puts their running gear out the night before. And the really cool thing about this is that we get away from thinking that change is about tons and tons of momentum and tons of effort and intensity right off the bat, and that instead change is about building a bridge, or change is about the foundations of a house being built, and then we layer more and more and more on. Because what we try to do is we try to leap chasms instead of building foundations. And that's the difference between outcome goals versus identity-based habits. So something small and as easy as being able to put your shoes on every day is going to be the first steps to actually becoming a runner and becoming the kind of person that could go out and run a marathon. And if you want to do this for your own life, I highly recommend it. It's incredibly powerful. It's life-changing. And if you want to get to what that tiny habit could be, I'm not going to say should be, just it can be anything. If you have it something that can be done in 2 minutes or less, you're going to be further ahead than if it takes you 10 or 20 or an hour. Think about this in terms of, what is the tiny step or the tiny first step that I've got to take in order for those other steps to happen? If I was going to create a workflow, if I was going to write out on a piece of paper for a 5-year-old child or a 6-year-old child, whoever, whatever child can read, okay, whatever, it's Matilda, right? She's reading Dickens and whatever, okay? Side note, my kids have been watching the new Matilda musical on Netflix, and they have now watched it so many times that I'm constantly singing like Trunchbull in my head. It's really good. I'd recommend it. I'm a huge Roald Dahl fan. Absolutely lapped up those books as a kid and have read them to my children as well. That has got nothing to do with anything. But if you were going to write on a piece of paper instructions for a child to make a sandwich, or for an adult to get to the school grounds for whatever reason, you'd start with step one. And if you were going to get really, really specific, it would probably be things like, take a left when you get out of your driveway. Like, if you were going to go from, this person has no idea what to do, and you've got to write every single thing, like they have no other information, and you wanted them to get a couple of blocks down the road, they have to start by getting out the driveway. But then when you really think about that, you go, well, actually, there's a step before that, right? They've got to get in their car, because it's going to require them to be in a car. They can't just walk there. All right, so before they get in the car, they probably need the keys to open the car. And before that, they probably need some kind of alarm to remind them when they're going to go and do it. So before that, like, they're probably going to have to turn on the alarm. So you can see now that in order to change, or in order to complete some kind of action, there's all these steps that we don't even think about, and they have to start somewhere. And so identity-based behavior and creating this, the most effective way to do it with this identity challenge, and when it doesn't have to be a challenge, you can do this for anything, any time, all the time, is to be thinking about what those small beginning steps are. And this is where it can be as simple as just putting out your gym clothes the night before, rather than committing to even doing the workout. Like, it can be that small, because the person who is the gym junkie and goes consistently 5 times a week and does 10 pull-ups in a row, that person is still the person that has to put out their clothes the night before, or most likely does, or some other kind of step, right? And maybe it's just putting their gym clothes on. Like, some kind of step must happen before doing the 5 pull-ups. So you're trying to bridge the gap by thinking about the small ones that don't require tons of motivation and willpower, because then you're going to do them consistently. And then the more consistently you do something, the more votes you put towards it. And that is what ultimately changes your belief about yourself and your identity. That's the key part here, because monumental effort, like going to the gym for 2 hours for 5 days a week on January 1st and then not doing it for 3 months, you know that doesn't get you anywhere. But if you every single day or 5 days a week for the next year, put on gym gear 5 days a week. Most likely by the end of the year, you would have gone more times because you simply had it on. And the idea here as well is that when we start with a step, we open up the possibility for us to do more steps that lead us in the right direction. So, identity-based habits are behaviors and actions that are consistent with our sense of self. They are internally focused. So, if you remember outcome goals, they're externally focused. Identity-based habits are internally focused. They allow us to create change from inside of us, and that shifts our belief in who we are. And they're much more sustainable, and they're extremely powerful in creating lasting change because they build foundations that we can then build on. And the number one reason that we fail, the number one reason that you can go to the gym over January or over the first couple of weeks of January at least, and it's packed, and that everyone's writing their New Year's resolutions and their New Year's goals and starting their diets, but come April, May, or even February, or towards the end of the year, we're nowhere closer to actually achieve them, is that we lose momentum. And the reason that it's so easy to lose momentum is that we do too much at once. And that's why Greg McKeown in his book, Essentialism, which is another behavioral change Bible in my opinion, suggests that we fail because we take on too many tasks at once. And then because of that, it becomes overwhelming and it leads to this feeling of being bogged down and then wanting to give up. And so what happens, and I'm sure you've experienced this yourself, I've done it so many times, is we lose focus, we lose motivation, and we ultimately stop doing that thing. And if you've ever experienced a 100% in and then 110% out scenario where you're all in, all out, and you are killing it on the diet, you're eating salads, you're going to the gym 5 days a week, and then suddenly you're in your PJs at 11 p.m. eating pizza and watching Netflix. And it's like this, it's this insane contrast. But it's very easy for us to do that because we're inherently designed to choose the path of least resistance in order for us to survive. If we loved making things harder than they need to be, if we weren't motivated by what feels good in the moment, we probably would have died out as a species. So as annoying as it is, it's actually a positive thing. So we want to set goals that can really allow us to go under the radar here. Small things, identity-based things, and things that we can do on our worst days, not just our best. And this is the other reason that small goals and tiny habits and all of these things are so powerful, is that we can still make progress, or we can at least stay the same on those days when we want to throw in the towel and where it would normally be this dichotomy of good versus bad. So that's what we're really trying to avoid here if we want to change our behavior, is this kind of in the pond, out of the pond scenario, which is a game that I used to play when I was a kid, and all the kids line up and they're standing on like a line of chalk drawn on the ground or on a tennis court, and then someone stands in the front of the line of all these kids and they say, in the pond, out of the pond, and the kids jump left and they jump right. And that's what we tend to do with our diets. What we want to avoid is that. It's black and white, it's binary, it's yes or no, it's pass or fail. Instead, we want to be making blips when we fail, and we want to kind of flatten the curve or flatten these waves of very, very different behavior based on how we're feeling, so that when we feel crappy, we do a little bit. When we feel amazing, we do lots, right? And that kind of creates this consistency that allows us to actually change. So with all that being said, the title of this podcast is Mediocre Goals for the New Year. So you can start to see that this is very contrasting to how we traditionally set goals. That by doing this, and by definition, we're creating or allowing there to be a sense of mediocrity, because we're not falling into this trap of having to create big goals or be focused on big outcomes. And here's the thing, I'm not saying that we can't achieve a lot in a short space of time. I've seen people do that countless times. It's going to require more skin in the game. It's going to require accountability. It's going to mean that you have to be focused on those daily actions that are going to lead you to results. You're still going to have this mindset of, I'm not in or out. I'm doing the best that I can in any moment. You're still going to have all that. But for a lot of things, like even in that system, like it's really, really important to create systems around ourselves that propel us forward in the quickest way possible, right? Because otherwise we're kind of wasting time. The crazy thing is that this does tend to be a pretty quick way forward by setting these identity-based goals, by being focused on, or identity-based habits, I should say, by being focused on internal intrinsic motivators and then doing those little things on a daily basis, or setting those goals higher, but then also having some kind of backup, right? Or like, what do I do in those moments? And so what I realized for myself coming into the new year is that I am really being, got to be really vulnerable here. My progress on a consistent yearly basis in the things that I care about and value is being hindered by an idea of needing to be being exceptional. It's funny that I even said that sentence with such terrible grammar, and I'm not going to go back and edit it, because I constantly feel like in order to be successful, which is what is required for me to be happy, which is required for me to feel calm or for things to be finished. Like, that's another big thing. Like, I want to be done. I want to be finished. I want to be at my goal weight. I want to be run the half marathon. I want to be this fit. I want to be able to do 10 pull-ups and then I'm going to be done, right? But then you still got to maintain that. You got to maintain that momentum. Maintaining momentum is hard, which is what I'm going to get into in a sec. But what I'm doing is I'm saying that I will only be calm and not have anxiety attacks and not be stressed out of my wits and like good enough and spend more time with my kids when I get there. And that's not the case, because can you see how this is such an outcome goal? Like, when I've achieved X, then I'll be Y. When it's this specific thing is, you know, it's measurable, it's externally focused. And the thing is, it is influenced by things out of my control. And year on year, I don't really feel like I'm getting closer to this kind of idea of wanting to be calm. But another reason for this that I kind of realized was that there's this equation that I've set up in my mind that in order to be this external goal must happen. And you've probably done something similar, or maybe you're doing something similar right now. And it's not all bad, but it's worth examining. So I'll only be calm and healthy and happy and confident and be able to meal prep and be able to eat healthy when I'm back home from holiday, or there's no stress in my life, or my teenagers have moved out, or whatever it is. It's saying that I'll only do this when the circumstances are this. It's putting a condition on making progress, and most of the time we put the conditions on things to making progress or feeling a certain way on things that are outcome specific, right? And then what happens is, if for some reason we can't achieve those outcomes, then we don't do the thing. And so for me, I've realized that a goal that I have, because the crap in my life is not going away, the stress is not leaving. Like, my husband is not being healed from MS. Like, he still has a progressive degenerative condition. My kids still yell. I still get really stressed all the time. I still feel this inward pressure to be phenomenal to the outside world and to create amazing podcasts and amazing YouTube content. And if I'm really honest, it's there's pride there too. There's ego there where it's like, I want to be better than other people. Like, I don't want to just be a recipe person. Like, I want to really change lives with habits and behavior and be smart and be all these things. And so what I'm saying is that I'll be good enough when I do that. And the thing is, I never feel like I'm doing that enough. I'm never carving out enough efficiency in my business to feel like I should stop working at 6 p.m. or 9 p.m. Like, I never feel that way, right? I never feel like I've done enough. I never feel like I can, you know, really celebrate the wins and the successes of the people in my program. Like, even though I hear that every day and people's lives are being changed, but it's never enough where I'm like, oh, you know, you've made progress. Like, good job. Because I see that there's so much more. And then I'm like, well, I'll be happy when it's, you know, this much better. And it's like, yes, it's great to actually be trying to achieve more and to do more and all this stuff. But it's meaning that because that's outcome specific, I can't actually enjoy these other things that I do want to cultivate, like a sense of peace in my life, like spending more time with my children, like having more or having less stress. Like, that was a big one. And so when this identity challenge started happening within the Lena Plants community, and we put it out there, and I started seeing these amazing posts from Lena Plants women, like, I am consistent, and this is what it means for me. I am active. I'm bold, or I'm all these different things. And I thought, and I'm like, well, you know, what do I want to have as my word for the new year? And I came up with this idea of calm. Like, I really want to be calm, and I'm going to do my 2-minute tiny habit. I'm going to do the first tiny step, which is to just try and think of things that I'm grateful for in those moments when I feel most stressed. And Lena Plants members, like, fam, you would have seen me post in the group, and this is an important goal for me. But what I realized is that in reality, I just want to be okay with being mediocre. And the reason for this is that I've realized that this need to be exceptional, this need to get more done, is really stopping me and to enjoy and appreciate the day-to-day moments, because I'm saying I can only be X when I do Y. And that is so far off in the future. It's dependent on so many things outside of my control. And I lose momentum, like everyone does. And so I want to explain what mediocrity means to me. The biggest thing it means to me is a way to combat all or nothing thinking and perfectionism. That I'm in the pond, I'm out of the pond scenario. And I've said so many times, fail faster, and that failure is okay, and that's a part of success, and all of these things. And I do 100% believe that. But what I've realized in the past couple of months is that I'm seeing failure as a means to an end. I'm seeing failure as a necessary requirement to being exceptional, and I still believe that. And that's not negative in and of itself, but if I'm bottlenecking happiness by needing to be exceptional, and that's only dependent on some kind of future outcome, then using that as a means to an end means that I can only, like, I'm still having to be exceptional. It's not about failure. Like, failure itself, if we contrast these two things, right? Outcome goals versus identity-based habits. Outcome goals, I need to be exceptional. That's kind of what I'm saying here. And if you don't relate to it, that's okay. I know that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people that do. And the crazy thing is that some of the people who have this desire and need to be exceptional the most are the people that fail the hardest. Like, that's the kind of thing that's crazy. And then the people that are okay with things moving slowly and being a bit mediocre and creating tiny habits actually make far more progress for that. So outcome goal, specific, being exceptional, right? It's way out there. Whereas identity-based habits, I am going to fail, right? I'm going to cultivate failure as part of my identity. Those two things are vastly different in how I view them. And so I've used fail faster as an outcome, as a way to achieve an outcome. And instead, I want to use fail faster, which is all about making mistakes and learning, as a means to itself, as an identity-based habit. And the way to do that, I believe, is to be okay with being mediocre so that I don't have to be perfect. Because what tends to happen for me is I use fail faster, and I use this idea of being okay at sucking at something in the beginning. But then when I get a little bit of proficiency and I do feel like I'm, you know, better than I was, then I no longer use that, because now the precedent is so much higher. Have you ever experienced this as well, where I've seen this so many times with women who have a weight loss goal, and they say, you know, I used to be down here, like I used to be at 160 pounds and now I'm at 180, and then they start losing weight and they don't even see the first 20 pounds of weight loss until they get to 160 as a win, because that's just where they were, right? That was just like the baseline. And we do this to ourselves all the time, where our baselines are constantly shifting. So it gets harder and harder for us to be okay with failure. And it gets harder for us to experience and celebrate the wins that we're having, because our idea of what's acceptable is constantly shifting. So here are five reasons that I think mediocrity and having this as an almost like a means to its end is a way to combat perfectionism. The first one that I've already talked about is that our actions can slip under the radar because we don't need a ton of motivation. So we're not trying to do big things because we're not big, great people. We're just normal, average, somewhat sucky people. And so we don't have to be great, right? So we don't need a lot of motivation to be mediocre. We can have more progress because progress is about consistency, not intensity. And having smaller goals allows us to be more consistent. So rather than being the person that has to smash out 5 workouts a week and feel like their legs are going to wobble out of their sockets every time they walk down the stairs, we're someone that's okay with going for a walk 3 times a week, or just picking up a few weights, or picking up our kids and doing a couple of things, right? And so we do that more consistently because it requires less effort and it's not as intense. And then because consistency is a prerequisite for success and achievement, we actually get closer to it, right? So we're able to make more progress when we don't have to have our actions being so spectacular and exceptional. The third reason is that we commit to making our falls smaller and less impactful. And the reason for this is that typically our fails derail us more than success propels us. Because success is all about consistency plus time. It's not about intensity. So short bursts of intensity don't actually achieve much. Going to the gym for the whole month of January doesn't achieve much if you haven't been going the rest of the year. Whereas consistency plus time, even if it's smaller, like going 3 times a week and spending 20 minutes or even 5 minutes, is going to get you closer to the goal. So what this means is that, and when I say that consistency or fails derail us more than success propels us, that means that when we stop going all together, or when we eat pizza instead of a not perfect meal, but an okay kind of meal. Like if we have a huge binge and eat 5 pizzas, that derails us much, much more than if we were just okay with our diets and not perfect. Do you see what I'm saying here? Because if we just give up completely and we do no exercise, we eat no vegetables, we eat just cookies, that's far more detrimental than if we were just like, you know, I'm going to have a cookie every single day, I'm going to have dessert every single day, but I'm also going to eat broccoli every single day, and I'm going to go out, you know, sometimes, and I'm not going to be perfect, and I'm still going to have avocado and fats in my diet, and I'm going to eat potatoes, and I'm not going to really worry too much if I'm super in tune with my hunger and all this other stuff. And then when I fail, it's not big fails. So this commitment to being mediocre means that I'm not passing with 100% in flying colors or failing. It's more kind of operating in this grayscale. The fourth thing is that it allows us to get out of this all in, all out cycle of thinking and behavior, because we're committed to finding alternatives and creative problem solving. And so committing to mediocre, let me just give you a really like easy example in my own life over the past couple of weeks is I was doing a ton of running, and I've cut back on my running, and there's a lot of reasons for this, partly because it's summer here and it's just really not comfortable to be running much and long distances. And the other thing is that I have got, like, I don't know how much to say. I've got a bit of, like, a personal, I wouldn't say medical, but there's something that I've got, like, in within my body that has just makes running, like, a bit more uncomfortable. And that's kind of, like, come and gone over the last couple of months, but it hasn't. It's just made running harder. So it's not, it's just created, like, another obstacle for me to actually get out there and run. And I don't enjoy it as much as I was. And I also don't see, like, the need for it. I'm like, well, I don't really feel like doing a half marathon or anything like that. So it's also like, well, what's the motivation to keep going? But I do want to stay fit. I have been going to the gym lots. And anyway, but because I haven't been running these, like, 10K distances or these 15K distances, and because I was seeing that as I need to in order to go for a run, I wouldn't even get out there and go for a walk. I wouldn't even get out there and run like a K or 3Ks, which it would be way better to run 3Ks than it would be to sit on the couch and snack on popcorn, right? Duh. So the other day I was like, you know what, be mediocre. You don't have to be amazing. You're not going to want to run out and do 10Ks, do three or do one. And so I went and I did a 3K run. It was actually 2.9Ks. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I got out there. And so what that does is it allows us to creatively think about alternatives. And it means that if you can't go for a 10K because you don't have time, you'll think of the 3K. It's not, oh, 10K or nothing. If you can't go to the gym for an hour, or you're too sore, or you're too tired, what if you did 10 minutes of Pilates at home because you're committed to doing something and it doesn't have to be amazing? What if instead of creating 30 posts a month on Instagram, if you're wanting to grow your account, you're like, you know what, I'm gonna take a story. I'm gonna just post a picture, right? Instead of doing some viral reels. Like, you're getting creative so that you can actually find alternatives, because you're no longer thinking in black and white. And so that's the fifth reason is why I think mediocrity and having that as a goal is great, is that we can teach ourselves to think on a grayscale rather than being binary. And these are some of the reasons that this is so helpful for us in actually thinking outside the box and adopting this kind of non-binary perspective, because it's so much better for creativity. And here's a few reasons why. It allows us to think about a much, much wider range of possibilities and ways that we could approach problems and ideas from different angles, because there's no longer right or wrong. It also helps us to challenge assumptions and biases that might be limiting the way that we're thinking, right? If I go to the gym for 10 minutes, that's not worth doing. Well, it allows us to challenge that, because now we go, well, is there a different way that I could do that, right? Or is that going to be not worth doing? Do you see what I'm saying here? It actually encourages us to be much, much more creative, and can lead to way more creative outcomes, because we're not saying that there's only one way of doing things. And so that in turn helps us to generate so many more ideas, because we're not saying there's right or wrong. So for me specifically, coming into the new year, I feel really good about having this mediocre goal. And I gotta tell you, it was such an effort to sit down and do this podcast, because I know that I've been neglecting this, and it really is, like, it's been a month. It's been probably actually more than that since I've sat down and done a podcast episode. And it's because I've had this pressure on myself to make it great. And then I've also had all of these things that are not aligned. Like, I've been really busy. There's things that are getting missed in my personal life, in my business. We're trying to sell a house right now. Like, there's so much going on. And I've said success is dependent. So creating content, like being creative, is dependent on everything else being aligned. And that's a lie. That's just such a lie. So being mediocre means, you know, heck, create a podcast, even if it's 15 minutes, even if it sucks, even if it is not good. And that was easier to do when there was one podcast episode and I said and like all the time. It's much harder to do now when the podcast gets between 5,000 and 10,000 downloads a week and there's you listening, and I appreciate you, I'm grateful for you, but that just becomes much, much harder. So mediocrity as a means, not to an end, but as a way of life, I believe is going to help me to do this. More time spent with my family, even if I'm not finished. More time creating content that's okay and therefore gets better because it doesn't have to be perfect. More time being calm and not being stressed because I don't have to be exceptional. I don't have to have all my ducks lined up. I don't have to be amazing. More time actually spending time with friends and with family. And like, I don't know about you, but as I age, this idea of spending time with my parents becomes more and more important because I know they're not going to be around forever. And the older my kids get, the more I think, like, this time is so precious and it slips away so fast. So being mediocre is really about saying, like, I don't have to create this kind of arbitrary level of success for myself or arbitrary level of neatness. I think that's the main thing, is that, you know, things just always feel unfinished. As a mum, as a business owner, as someone who is still on a weight loss journey, because maintenance is still a journey. Habits and eating broccoli as opposed to pizza is still an ongoing journey. But being mediocre in it means that you can still live amongst the messiness. So that's what it means to me. It means that I'm committed to going to the gym more and going for 10-minute walks with my kids in the morning or 20-minute runs, as opposed to skipping whole weeks because I couldn't face running 10Ks. It means to me responding back to text messages, which a lot of the time I leave because I didn't know what to say in response, right? But instead saying like, hey, like I'm not sure, you know, reach back out to me, like I hear you and thanks for the text and I love you. I just can't commit to a time right now, whatever that means, right? So what I believe is that, and what I want to commit to over this next year, is mediocre goals because I want to have the ability to live my life better with less pressure. And I do want to achieve more with less effort. And that's why this podcast episode is titled Mediocre Goals for the New Year. How I plan to do more, less and achieve more. Because I do believe, and I've seen it hundreds of times, and it's consistent with everything we know about behavioral change, that the people who act consistently, no matter how mediocre and small it is, it always beats intensity. It always beats out the people who have a ton of momentum and then lose that. And so this year, my plan is to be the person that, you know, maybe doesn't do 5 pull-ups by March, but they're still going to the gym, even if it's only 20 minutes, by December. And maybe they're not the person that runs a half marathon, or 3 or 4, or does a full. But they're still getting out there and putting their running shoes on all the way through the year, rain, hail, and shine. The person that, even if the house is messy and they haven't finished everything that they need to do for the day, they can still sit down and enjoy time with their kids and their spouse. That's the person that I want to be. The person that, no matter how stressful things are, they can still appreciate the good. And that's what mediocre this year means to me. If any of this resonates with you, then, I mean, maybe that's a good word for you to have. But regardless, I do challenge you and encourage you to focus your behavior around identity-based habits as opposed to outcome goals, and not fall into this trap of thinking that just by setting great goals, you're going to achieve them. You've got to get into a system that allows change to happen. And whether that's on your own or working with a program or getting a coach or anything else that you're doing, it must be focused on behavioral change, not just knowledge, implementation, and consistent, messy, mediocre action over just intensity. All right, I'm waffling now, so I'm going to leave this here. And good or bad, mediocre or amazing, this is an episode that has been on my chest for a while, and I hope that it's helped you. I will be back next week for another mediocre episode, possibly. Mediocre, possibly not, but I'm committing to it, no matter how small and dumb it is. So I will see you then. And if you like the episode and you get a lot out of these, then please leave a review. It takes about 5 minutes. It's a bit of mediocre effort, but it has a huge effect when there is 600 or 800 people who have left good reviews, because that tells the podcast gods and it tells anyone who's looking for a good potty to listen to that this one is a-okay, and that helps to spread this message. And I don't know about you, but I wish that I'd known about the science of losing weight on a plant-based diet and how to do that through habit change many a decade ago. So give us all the help. Give me a help. Give your anyone out, your internet universe, friends, whatever, help, but please, writing review. All right, that really is it. I'll see you next week. Bye.